Track 3, The Elements of Trust. Step number 1, Appropriate.
As we begin covering the intricacies of the Sell It Today system, I'd like to talk to you for a moment about how we learn such things. If you recall high school math, you probably had to memorize formulas for solving algebraic problems and theorems for geometry. If you're like me, you didn't understand the formulas or theorems when you first had to memorize them. So grasping the concepts may have been a bit difficult to begin with. However, once you got further along in class and began applying the formulas to math problems, the power of those formulas and theorems became quite obvious. The same thing rings true here. To attain mastery of the Sell It Today, Sell It Now system for mastering the art of the one call close, I'm going to teach each area separately. I'll assign homework for you to be certain you're clear on each point. Then at the end of the program, we'll put together the whole system and some examples so you can see how beneficial it is when used in its entirety. That's when you'll see the power of the system and be glad you learned each of the steps along the way. So please, if you're new to this wonderful profession of selling, don't be concerned if in the beginning some of the components of the Sell It Today system aren't clear. Let's get to work on understanding the first element of the system. And that first element is trust. Realistically, you can't measure with any degree of accuracy the level of trust a prospect feels towards you, your company, or your product until you get feedback. That feedback can be in the form of direct answers, by the way the prospect dodges questions, or even through body language. A one-call closing master is always monitoring the prospect or client for those vital signs. But what about those precious seconds before you can get any real feedback? You can get some pretty good indications even before the first hello. For example, a prospect who holds back, looks nervously around, won't look you directly in the eye, probably is severely lacking in the trust department. Then again, the prospect may have a lot of trust, but may also be terribly shy or just intimidated by a lack of knowledge about your product or your company. Lack of knowledge is one of the fears we've already discussed. Don't let it stand in your way. Educate your clients. Never forget, I truly believe the selling process in most instances is an educational process. Handling the situation according to the one-time closing process will soon provide you with the answers you seek. But regardless of the individual or circumstances, one of two levels of trust will always be present. Number one, some trust. Number two, no trust at all. It is important that you discover which is which immediately. When the prospect initiates the sale, they contact you. You can safely assume there is at least some level of trust present. After all, he or she would never have picked up the phone, agreed to your meeting, or walked in the door otherwise. This person's level of trust could be significant. That's especially true when the prospect has been referred by a trusted friend. On the other hand, the level of trust could be at best, shall we say, lacking, where they're thinking, I don't know you, I don't know your product, I don't know your company, I don't know your capabilities, I don't know your reputation, I don't even know your industry. This is more likely to occur in salesperson-initiated sales. The important point to note is that you can work with any situation once you define it. Even if the level of trust borders on minuscule, the one-call closing system will help you do everything possible to, number one, maintain the level from the first instant of contact, and number two, start reducing sales resistance by building on that initial level of trust. You might wonder, how much trust is enough? The quick answer is all you can get. More important is to realize that you don't have to earn all the trust in the world in the first 10 seconds of your approach. That's totally unnecessary, and worse, making that kind of intensive effort will probably backfire on you. Your potential client could start thinking, If this salesperson is so concerned about trust, there must be some problem here. Hey, I don't trust this guy. Initially, you want to achieve enough trust so the prospect will listen to the rest of the presentation and believe you are not only truthful, but of their best interests at heart. At first, that's all you have to do. Establish that basic level and build from there. When you continue your presentation, according to One Call Closing Principles, the trust will inevitably grow. Your prospect will soon have no qualms about owning the product because you will determine his or her unique need and will show why your product is the best solution. Gaining trust can easily be done in 5 sequential steps. Note, each step must be taken in its proper order. To do otherwise is like preparing an omelet by putting the eggs in before the cooking oil. Old things will heat up all right, but you'll most certainly have a rather sticky and unpleasant experience on your plate. Being so hard to come by, trust is remarkably easy to lose. Once lost, trust proves amazingly difficult to regain. You want to hold on to every ounce of trust you gain dearly, like the precious treasure it truly is. Your goal to reduce sales resistance by building trust is to create a situation where your potential clients safely and realistically come to like you, trust you, and want to listen to you. There are 5 trust-building steps you need to tread. Each step reduces our sales resistance thermometer by approximately 10 degrees. Now, the 5 steps to gaining trust are, 1, propriety or appropriateness. 2, intent statement. 3, commonality. 4, credibility. And 5, competency. Once you've completed these steps in order, you will have built enough trust to reduce the average person's sales resistance by half. Let's begin with step 1, propriety. The word propriety comes from 2 root words, proper and appropriate. Propriety is defined in Webster's Dictionary as the standard of what is socially acceptable in conduct or speech. In other words, for something to possess propriety, it must fit the situation. Your organization, you and your fellow salespeople, and your support materials must all fit your job responsibilities and the image you want your potential clients to perceive. Everything must be proper and appropriate. Otherwise, things tend to fall apart in a most embarrassing and costly way. The clothing you wear as part of your job is a perfect example. It's part of your conduct. As a general rule, we believe in dressing the part. Suit, tie, well-pressed pants or skirt, and polished shoes are usually essential elements of the dress code of a sales professional. However, some companies have less strict dress codes. In fact, in some retail outlets, khaki pants with a company logo shirt is the appropriate attire. If your company dictates a certain style of dress, be certain you adhere to it. That includes having whatever the uniform is properly cleaned and pressed, and your shoes in good repair and shined. Your hair, skin, and nails need to be attended to as well. Don't let something as simple as needing a haircut or manicure allow you to put forth the wrong image. It's sad but true. From the moment you make contact with a prospect or client, you are being judged visually, verbally, and even instinctively. Remember, anything that can be judged will be judged. Fair or not, that's just a fact of doing business, and that's why acting the part to get the part is so critical. You never get a second chance to make a good first impression. That's an old saying, but it's been around so long because it's so right. In sales, making a good first impression is vital, and it goes beyond your dress, makeup, jewelry, speech, and body language. Everything about you should fit what your customer expects for the situation at hand. Consider this picture. The owner of a small farm tractor dealership starts out his day in a sharp 3-piece suit, new tie, polished shoes, etc. The first thing on his to-do list is a visit to his bank's loan department for a business expansion loan. Is he dressed properly, appropriate to the situation? Your answer is yes, he is. There is absolutely nothing at all wrong with this picture. And you are absolutely correct. Now let's change the scene. Same owner, same outfit. This time he's visiting the largest farmer in the valley in the hope of selling a brand new $75,000 Dirt Slinger 2000. Naturally, the farmer is a working man working on his farm, which is to say working way out there in the dirt. Here comes our well-dressed dealer slopping through the dirt and ruining his formally polished shoes in the mud to shake hands with his potential client. What kind of impression is he making? Is his dress appropriate to the situation? Of course not. The farmer likely takes our poor owner for a fool for coming out in a muddy field dressed like that. In this scenario, the perfect dress for one part of his job is totally out of place in another. Being overdressed could cost him the sale because the farmer won't trust the opinion of someone who is not like him, much less someone showing a remarkable lack of common sense. Normally, you wouldn't expect a successful business owner to be wearing blue jeans and scruffy work boots to make a big sale. But if that sale takes place out in the North 40, that dress is entirely appropriate. Conversely, if our tractor dealer's appointment with the banking committee is in the afternoon, he'd be well advised to clean up his act and get back into the three-piece suit before making his presentation. Bankers may appreciate the North 40, but they don't want any of it on their expensive carpet. Don't you agree? Your total personal profile, including clothing, hairstyle, jewelry, body language, and conversational style, should be in sync with your prospect's perception of what you should be. If you're in doubt of what that picture should be, talk frankly with one of the top salespeople at your company, a friend or loved one, or your best client. Tell him or her that you have a goal to fine-tune your professional image and would appreciate any input they could make. Be specific with your questions in order to get specific answers. Ask questions such as these. Do you find my appearance professional? Specifically, if you were my boss, what recommended changes would you suggest I make to appear more professional to my potential clients? Is my cologne too strong, or does it bother you at all? Would you be offended if I came to your office in a dress shirt and tie instead of a suit or a sport coat? You see, once you get the conversation going, most people will be happy to offer advice. Just be certain you're asking someone whose opinion you value. Speaking of getting the conversation going, it's always wise to err on the side of formality when you first meet someone. I recommend that you greet people with the words good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. If it's a prearranged meeting, use Mr., Mrs., or Miss with their surname, Mr. Johnson, Mrs. Jones, Miss Smith. Never move too quickly to the more familiar first name. This is just simple courtesy, but it's missing in so many sales situations. It will make you stand out as being more professional than the average salesperson. If you'll be investing some time with your potential clients, consider saying this: Mr. Johnson, I'd prefer you call me Tom. Would you mind if I call you by your first name? 99% of the people you meet won't mind this at all. However, you don't know when you'll meet that one percenter who'd be offended by it, and again, you'll find it's better to be too polite than not polite enough. If you had just gone ahead and started using first names without permission, you may have cost yourself the sale. Now, for a business-to-business sale, a consideration in this area of propriety is what you bring with you to any meeting. If you show up towing a baggage cart loaded with everything from your office except your family photos, you're overdoing it. Sure, it's wise to be prepared, but preparation doesn't mean having literally everything with you. I recommend for most salespeople to carry as little as possible. If you do need to carry several items, find a nice, slim-looking tote bag that allows you to be well-organized. There are several steps I've taught for many years to finessing the initial contact. They include: Step 1, smile and give a warm greeting. Step 2, repeat their names 4 times. Now, to yourself, of course, I know you know that, but this will enable you to remember that name and not go through that embarrassing situation where they gave you the name, but it left you and you forgot it. Step number 3, match their speed and volume of speech for 90 seconds. This is called tuning in and properly communicating. Step 4, make good eye contact with all parties. Step 5, search for commonalities. We'll discuss this further in another segment. Step 6, give a sincere compliment. Flattery, when it's sincere, does establish rapport. Step 7, act relaxed. Dead giveaways as to nervousness on your part include lack of eye contact, too many or too large hand gestures, inability to sit still, and not smiling. Work on controlling those traits in selling situations. Let's talk for a moment about your various communication devices. While I'm all for the use of pagers, phones, laptops, and PDAs, there is a certain amount of etiquette that applies here as well. Don't take your phone into a meeting with a prospective client unless you're expecting an emergency call or a call related to the meeting. If you must carry the phone, place it out of sight and set the ringer to vibrate so the client isn't interrupted by any noise it might make. Take advantage of voicemail during the meeting if at all possible. With regard to a laptop or PDA, I understand the value of taking notes on them during meetings. However, holding a PDA or setting a laptop up so only you can see the screen raises a barrier between you and the client. For all they know, you could be playing PGA golf on the screen as you make entries. Consider laying a PDA flat on the table or desk and keeping your laptop closed to begin with and get permission to take notes by saying. And these words are very important that you practice. When you want to make notes, make sure you get permission. Just smile and warmly say, you know, over the years, I've found it very beneficial to make notes during conversations so I can do a better job of helping people. So I hope you won't be offended if while we chat, I make a few notes. Once you get permission to make notes with a laptop, you want to set it to your side a bit, turned on an angle slightly toward the client, so there are no secrets and no barriers. If you're in doubt about how you appear to your clients during your presentations, consider videotaping yourself giving one. Video cameras are very affordable these days, and if you don't yet own one, then you can certainly rent or borrow one. Set it up, turn it on, shout lights, camera, action, and record your presentation. Forget all about camera angles, zooms and pans, art direction, music, titles, and all that. Just concentrate on the script and the performance. Ask someone to play the role of prospect or client. If no one is readily available, don't hesitate to put on a one-man or one-woman show. Face the camera as if it were the potential future client or customer, and see how you look through someone else's eyes. After you finish, study the tape. How was your speaking voice, your posture, body language, eye contact, overall appearance as far as dress and grooming? What you said and how you said it, and most importantly, how good was your approach, presentation, and close? When reviewing your work, ask if you would buy something from this person. Then ask why or why not. Don't hold back. Be a harsh critic. After all, this is one movie you can start from scratch all over again until you're completely happy with both the writer and the actor. You'll probably surprise yourself with what you see on the film. Yes, you'll be lousy in some unexpected part of your presentation, but you'll also find areas where you're surprisingly better than you think. And after you review your movie and make the appropriate script changes, continue rehearsals, and I guarantee you'll be delivering star performances from the approach all the way to the successful close. One other point I'd like to cover in this area of propriety is punctuality. Barring those infamous acts of God that appear in the clauses of your insurance papers, it is unforgivable for a salesperson to be late. That's a breach of basic business etiquette and is guaranteed to make a poor and perhaps lasting impression. Punctuality requires careful time planning, and that's good news because planning your time is simple. Here's a way to instantly improve your efficiency by 20% or more. Form one simple habit. Each evening, make a list of all the things you have to accomplish the following day. Rank them in the order of most important to least important. This little chore shouldn't take more than a few minutes each evening. The next day, instead of dashing about wondering what fire to put out next, all you have to do is follow your list. Knock down the items one at a time until you're through. Creating a to-do list in the evening allows your subconscious mind to start working on it, making it happen even while you're sleeping. Try this technique. Give it enough time to prove itself, and I'm positive you'll amaze your coworkers and clients at how quickly you accomplish your goals. Take an extra minute or two and write out a list of all the things you can do or learn to make yourself more efficient. Then start following that list too. I've given you a lot to work on here. However, since propriety is the first step to building trust and reducing sales resistance, you have to get it right every time. Investing extra time in this step now will shorten the amount of time you need to invest in it later, allowing you to move more quickly to the next step of trust building, which is intention. We'll cover that next.